This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Across Australia, on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community radio stations around the nation. This is Word for Word, coming to you from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Word for Word. Great to be with you today. Thanks for joining us. Dean Beck here, and joining me is Andrew Pryor. Today is quite an exciting one for me. I get to speak to a woman who has made a career out of musical theatre, and she's done it coming from a small country town here in Victoria, and has managed to be in high demand ever since. Her starting days at the Victorian College of the Arts has blossomed, and it is my great pleasure to welcome Anne Wood to Word for Word. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
You're, of course, kicking off with yet another production.
Yes.
With Anything Goes with the production company. But I want to go right back to those early days in Kerrang.
1923.
Yes. where you shone vocally even back then.
Have you been speaking to my mother?
No, an ex-boyfriend of yours, actually. However, your mother, I must say, is a lovely, lovely woman. But I'll get to her in a minute.
I'm frightened now.
Yeah, you should be. You should be. Tell me about the growing up in Kerrang.
Well,
it's not the most musical of places, I would have thought.
No, it isn't. And that was back in the days before Glee, of course. I look at what's going on now with shows like that, where it's not nerdy anymore to be passionate about music theatre or singing in the choir.
Or gay. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's quite it's such a revolution. And I think about how different my life might have been if there had been that kind of acceptance way back then.
But might have been more competition. Mm.
Well, that's true. I probably wouldn't have. I'd be a biology teacher now.
Because you did study environmental science.
I did do that. Yeah, I did. Well, my father. Growing up in a town like that, we had very little music. Although I did have there was a very strong choir for a short period of time at the school, which was. And we had an extraordinary time. We just sung classical things and religious things, and there was never anything.
But quite well.
We did very well. We sang in competitions around Victoria, and we just had a little moment, about a year, where we sliced up the prizes.
Was it just one of those things where the stars aligned and that year as it went through happened to be a good year for
music? We actually had an incredible music teacher, and she came over as part of the American. Remember we invited a whole lot of American teachers to come over because there was a lack in certain areas.
Yeah, yeah.
And she came over with her husband, who was a maths teacher.
And we stuck them out in Kerrang?
Yes.
Oh, dear.
I know. Imagine how they must have felt.
I hope she got paid well.
As the bus got further and further away from Melbourne.
Indeed.
Help. But she was really incredibly inspiring. And a lot of us really found our voices during that time, I think.
Just on your parents, how did they do with the recent floods? Was that in any way?
They live in the town, and they're on the hill. So
there's a hill. I don't recall a hill
near
in
the
Kerrang.
Hospital. You've been there.
I don't recall a hill.
It's got an elevation of about 3 inches, but it's definitely a hill. I've seen the contour
right.
maps.
got it.
But so they weren't on the edge of the town, but they were certainly isolated. Couldn't get out for, and I was actually doing. doing Prodigal for the Midsummer Festival, and I was relying on my mother to babysit, so I was quite miffed personally, which was very selfish of me. It was a very strange time, I think, because lots of people came in from the outlying areas and set up caravans on people's nature strips, and of course all the shops shut, everything was quiet, there were no papers, you couldn't buy, you had to stock up on food, and they said it was quite an eerie time because we're so used to everything being open all the time these days.
And we're not talking the 1930s, we're talking last year.
We're talking January.
January this year.
So it was it was very difficult. And of course, lots and lots of people up there are still mopping up and in terrible strife. So when I drive up quite regularly and you see the caravan parks are just full up there, it's all the little towns, Bridgewater and places like that, all the way up.
So when you're in a town like that growing up, how do you get out of there? How do you come into, do you have to go to the big city?
You go to university.
I
was begging to go to university just so I could. And I didn't even really mind what I did, I guess. But never in a million years did I think that I could have a career in music theatre.
Right.
I think when I left, I'd never even seen a professional musical. And we also had another brilliant teacher who was very instrumental in my life who directed Gilbert and Sullivan shows at school. So I had a taste of things there. But never thought. And as you pointed out, I went into environmental science.
Which, back then, you know, in 1852, what must have been quite...
I've aged 100 years in the last...
I don't recall environmental sciences being... I don't recall
you're right,
that
it was
language.
Very new. It was very new. Yes. And there was only one course that you could do. My idea was that I would write environmental impact statements for big companies and show them the way, because clearly they had no idea. And it was around about the time the protesting against the dam in Tasmania.
The Franklin River Dam.
And I thought the only course that you could do was actually a teaching course, but everybody there had no interest in teaching. They just wanted to work in the field.
Yeah.
But I was very naive, and I thought I'd be learning how to, you know, padlock myself to trees and make great big banners saying down with the government. And it wasn't anything like that. It was organic chemistry and crazy things. So.
Oh, how boring.
It was a bit.
how did that migrate to music, to voice?
I kept singing in choirs, mm-hmm. and I auditioned one day really as a dare for the College of the Arts for the opera studio, and I got in. They took two sopranos a year, and I got in, and I was there for 3 years, and that was a very performance-based course. You really, you would do a slab from an opera and you would play a main part. Everybody played a main part, so we only did little bits of different operas. And the night of your first performance, they would give you your score for the next bit that you were doing. And the College of the Arts was very heavily, very well funded back in those days. So we had lots of fabulous conductors and directors from everywhere. They would bring people from overseas and visiting.
And highly competitive, though, to get into.
I guess.
I mean, you've got to be good to get it.
I never thought about that at the time. I was.
Did you have to? I mean, to come from a country town, so to speak, to the big city, and then to have to then learn. You know, you're obviously learning a different language to sing at that stage.
We did Italian, French, and German at the VCA.
I mean, that would have been you know, just amazing to come back and.
It was good fun.
Not
yeah.
standard issue
throwing
for Korean.
No,
we didn't have any languages. I think I had French for a year, and I learned how to say "it is foggy." That's the only thing I can remember, which was very useful last week.
I can still
week.
Say I want some milk, but that's about it.
So your time at the Victorian College of the Arts, was that a competitive time? Was it a good time?
I don't remember it being competitive at all, actually, but I do remember it being joyous because we were performing all the time and really being challenged, and it was very exciting. I loved it.
You've not just sort of your education, if you like, hasn't just stopped there. Any singer that does 7-8 shows a week has to look after their voice and has to, I guess, create a strength within their voice that can maintain that whilst also looking after it. Did you focus on that particularly?
I think it depends on what role you're playing. Quite often these days I find I'm getting roles where I don't sing at all, and it's just straight acting roles in Anything Goes that I'm doing at the moment. I really I barely sing. I think I have two solo lines or something.
Oh, no. There's so many great songs in there.
I know.
I was hoping you were going to belt out a few tunes.
Phew. But I certainly, if you have a big singing role, it's an incredible commitment. I know when I started Mamma Mia, which is probably the hardest singing role I've ever done, huge, huge sing. And I was the first girl who'd ever done 8 shows a week. Before, in other countries, they'd only done 7 shows a week. And it was just blistering. I couldn't even speak on the phone during the day for the first 6 months. I had to have complete vocal rest. And then I'd stagger in and do another show. It was a very... I had to be incredibly disciplined.
I read a review that was in The Age that, that said that you were at your maximum. And you were borderline pushing it too far.
Yeah. It's very, it's tricky because we were singing, we discovered in the unravelling of the ABBA songs, which the original production team had to do, they discovered that the two girls in ABBA actually, they would sometimes, one of the girls would sing the bottom end of the line and one would sing the top end of the line because it was such, the range of the songs was so huge. So it's, and of course we didn't have that luxury. Whoever was singing the song had to sing the whole damn thing. So, and they just weren't meant to be done 8 times a week. So I've just last year finished a year of it and of another tour with Mamma Mia. And I certainly, I said, I'd love to do it again. I don't care how much you pay me, but I'm only doing 7 shows. And it made a huge difference.
Really?
Huge
just
difference.
Just that one show?
Just that one. Wow. Really, I felt much less vocal fatigue than I did the first time. So,
interesting.
Yeah, it's tough.
Now, you cut your teeth with and became known from the musical Cats.
Yes.
Why does Cats get such a bum rap? Because it does. Oh. Universally,
gets I'm a frightened bum rap. To say.
I want to know.
Obviously, I'm the musical theatre fan. I love Cats. It's fantastic.
Have you seen it recently?
No.
Why do you say that?
I only ask that because I saw it a few years ago now, I think, when it was in the tent. And I wondered whether it had actually stood the test of time in some ways.
Yeah.
I wondered with things like Cirque du Soleil and all sorts of magnificent things happening live on stage, you kind of expect a bit more. But I have to say the very first time I saw Cats, I went up to see Marina Pryor because she was a mate of mine and I had absolutely no idea what was going on. I couldn't make head nor tail of it. I thought Deborah Byrne had rubbed herself up against my leg at one point, so I was quite thrilled about that.
Did you see it in Sydney or
yes.
in Melbourne? Because I saw it in Sydney at that funny little theatre that got in the middle of the
Theatre Royal.
Yeah, that's it.
Where I saw it.
And they literally did come out from between your legs.
Yes.
Mm. It's extraordinary.
It was. And I couldn't work out who was who. I watched Marina the whole time, then found out the next day she was actually off and I was watching her understudy and I had no clue.
Isn't that a good thing?
I guess that is a good thing.
Maybe. I don't know.
I think it is a good thing.
But
you're right.
Cats gets a bum rap.
But
all
when
the
I
time.
Start well when I started doing the show, I felt I was quite passionate about it by the end because I really had a much deeper level of understanding, which of course you get from working with the director and it made much more sense to me. But I can imagine if you just paid your money and turned up that it can be a little bit confusing.
Really?
Then I went on to do it in Germany. It was very confusing in German.
I remember, I was only very young, but I remember my mother reading me the book, the original book, and then...
Oh, see, you came from an educated standpoint.
Yeah,
it's a little bit different.
I kind of got it all.
It all made sense.
I just thought it was great. It was all like cats running around everywhere and singing memories and, of
and
course,
that
being
incredible
gay,
set.
Coming home and having Barbara Streisand sing the song later on. That was fabulous.
And people, cast members getting locked in the boot of that car and all sorts of things.
I've heard
some funny stories.
I'm quite claustrophobic and I had to be in that boot a few times and it was not a pleasant moment.
Hours and hours of makeup each night, was it not?
You got quite quick at it, actually.
Right.
I got very quick. So in the beginning it was slow, but then after a while you got quite smart at it.
We're speaking with Anne Wood. She is starring in Anything Goes. The production company is putting that on very shortly. And some musicals are ageless. They just hold their own, and this is one of them.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's just Cole Porter, what a clever man. A genius in his time, but also ahead of his time in so many ways. This particular piece is, and I've never really thought about it before, but, you know, we're living in an age right now where celebrity is celebrated rather than somebody's achievements. It's about being, it's the Big Brother factor. And really Anything Goes is about that. It's about the fact that they need celebrities, anybody, even infamous, on the boat, which is making the crossing across the Atlantic to London, from New York to London, just to make the trip interesting and to keep the bookings up. And even if that's a criminal or a killer, it's still worthy of...
But musically too, their musical theatre is often criticised for being a little formulaic in its structure, in its musicality. And
who says that?
I will tell you his name after this interview is finished. You know him very well, but that is a standalone song. One, absolutely,
it is.
And you've got I Get a Kick Out of You, You're the Top. I mean, they're all songs that would be hits just in their own right.
In during rehearsals, Alex Rathgeber, the gorgeous Alex Rathgeber, sings All Through the Night, and I just am awash by the end of it. It's so beautiful, so creamy and romantic, and the words are so evocative. I find myself, you know, my heart drifting back to things, and beautiful.
The production company's formula is pretty quick. Yeah, very short rehearsal time.
Oh, yes.
Minimal staging, a bit of costuming, do the show. And it's on for a short season. Your resume is not like that. Your resume is you get a gig, you stick with it, and you not only stick with it for one season, you then tour with it, and then you do it for another season, and you come back to it. What do you like about this production company version of putting on a show as opposed to what you're used to, I guess?
Well, I don't like that aspect of it because I know that the company, I know on Sunday when we do our final show, the company will be devastated because we're just starting to get our teeth into it. We're just starting to get our heads around it.
And your own rhythm.
And starting to gel. Yep. And starting to really love it and not be so fearful. And it's finished. So it's disappointing in that way.
It's
a teaser.
A failing of the model?
I can understand why they do it because it ensures that it's sold out.
Yeah, they've always got bums on seats.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's just about always full.
Yeah.
And it also allows them to do three a year. And it's a rare opportunity for an actor to actually experience sometimes the feeling of being in rep, I guess. I was, a couple of years ago, I was fortunate enough to do Follies and Yankees. And I did Follies. That was a fantastic experience. I had 2 weeks off. And then I turned up that Monday morning. I parked in the same car park. I went up to the same rehearsal studio and there was some similar people. And I just had a new script and a new score and off we went. And I thought, oh, I'm like a jobbing actor. It was really exciting. So, but one of the huge strengths for the production company is it is one of the few opportunities the public are going to ever have, and even the actors are going to have, to hear the full orchestration. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing synthesized. You've got the whole kit and caboodle sitting right there on the stage. You can see them, and it is magnificent. We had that rehearsal with the orchestra yesterday for Anything Goes. And, it was a privilege to be in the room.
With full tap solo choreography? Or
yes, all of that. It's all that? Fully choreographed.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, Andrew Hallsworth is choreographing it. He's the guy who did Priscilla. He's very clever.
Wow.
Yeah, very clever, very witty choreography.
So you miss out on some things, but you really do get a good taste of the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's the full thing. It done in an even fuller way than you would normally experience. Indeed. Because it's the full orchestra.
And for yourself, you mentioned that you're not singing In this production, so it's more of an acting role. So,
except for the line at the end,
right.
Wait for that.
Right. And so, what's that like for you? Because you're listening to everybody sing, and are you either wanting to be there, or are you getting engrossed in it? Like you've mentioned so many times about different people singing in it. So is that something?
I do get pretty engrossed, to be honest. I get carried off, and there's so much talent in the room, so much experience. It's pretty special being able to sit there and listen. Every now and then, I have a little moment of jealousy. But I did, when I was in London, I did a show about Cole Porter's life called Swell Party, that did tremendously well, and it really started things for me over there. And it was the story of his life using his songs to illustrate his life. And I think I developed a passion for him then.
You were in the film?
Yes, we made a film of it as well, and we recorded it, and the recording did very well. I think it was the first time that a man had recorded the song Love for Sale, which everybody had assumed that Cole Porter had written as a woman's song, where she was talking about being a prostitute. But in actual fact, it was a reference to Cole Porter's. He had quite a predilection for young male prostitutes, and it was really about that. And Martin Smith recorded it, and it was the first time that a bloke had ever done it, I think.
Very interesting. And tell us a little bit about your time in both London and in Germany. What opportunities were you given, and how did you grow through that experience?
I did the first Cats tour here, the first national tour, which was a huge eye-opener for me. I really had a wonderful time. And then at the end of it, I was invited to go to Germany because they had mostly been casting out of America and London at that point, and they were starting to need people who did the sort of things that I did. It wasn't dancing, I can tell you that. So I went over for 6 months initially, and I ended up staying for 9 months. And then I went to London because I worked with a drama coach in Germany who said, you really need to go to London and get some experience auditioning. And back in those days, good God, it was possible to only have a couple of auditions a year here in Australia. So I was incredibly green. So I went to London and Swell Party was the first job that I had, actually.
So honed your acting skills. Right.
And they had a great attitude in London, which I think they still have here, where they didn't care if they didn't know me. I had very little on my CV, Cats and Baba the Elephant. I think
Lovely.
That was it.
but they
liked what I did, and they were willing to take a risk on me. So.
And you took on Aspects of Love?
Yes. That was another. That's up there with the hard female roles, I have to say. Angelo Weber, God, he writes the most incredible things for women. Amazing roles for women. Think about Norma Desmond and even Grisabella. Yeah. She's on stage for 16 minutes and it's the only song you remember. It's brilliant.
Good point.
In the dressing room the rest of the time, sewing.
And was he involved? Was he involved in that production? Like, does he step in or...?
No. By the time I did both of those shows, he was...
It was extremely well packaged internationally, though, wasn't it? There were sort of, if I recall, there were touring coaches to get the whole movements down and the makeup down and the...
Was this with Cats?
Yes. It was a franchise.
It was the first mega musical where nobody was billed, so it was just Cats.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
And the Cats' eyes made them incredibly recognisable. When you saw those Cats' eyes somewhere,
still,
you knew exactly what it was.
It's an extraordinary brand.
Extraordinary brand. Mm. And after that came Les Mis and then Phantom, of course, and that was the beginning of the big mega musical thing.
What do you think of his latest production, Love Never Dies?
Oh, he's such a rat. He's asking me that. I have to say I went to the friends and family dress rehearsal. So it was very early on. I thought it was absolutely beautiful. It was stunning to look at.
Every trick in the book.
Really. It was glorious. And the music and the orchestra were really, really delicious. I love the orchestrations and his writing, I thought was brilliant. I just wanted more narrative, that's all. I ached for my friends up there who didn't. I felt didn't have enough meat to wrap their chops around.
I ached for the poor young boy who had to
all that tough singing,
singing those minor tones or whatever it was,
and incredible intervals
with such darkness too, because he is the reincarnation of the Phantom, and it's so dark.
Mm.
You know, his language is so dark for a 10-year-old. But anyway, I digress.
Yes, I wondered, I worried for him too. Yes.
Your evolution to get through to Mamma Mia, how did that come about? Because you then just made it your own, really.
It was, that was such a blessing, really, the show. I think one of those situations where the timing was right for me. I'd really, when I heard that they had done a show with ABBA songs, I rang my agent and said, if I can make the tea at rehearsals, I'll be happy. I just wanted to be in the room. And I'd had
bit
people...
Bit of a fan?
I had... Always. I had friends who'd seen it in London and they came back and said, oh, there's a great role for you. And then I started... They had a coach. They sent a coach out to Australia to pick the dynamos, to pick little teams of dynamos, so that when the creative team came over, they could say, well, we've coached these people as Donnas and these people as Tanyas. And I was actually coached as a Tanya, which, of course, is the role that Rhonda Birchmore played originally. And I went in after 5 months of work and sung for Bjorn and the director and Judy Kramer, who was the inventor of the show. And I remember the director just shaking her head and frowning at me. And she said, what have you been doing? And then Bjorn said, do you know The Winner Takes It All? I thought, oh, Lord, help me. Because the other people who'd been singing The Winner Takes It All had been rehearsing it for 5 months, and I'd been rehearsing Does Your Mother Know? And I bet you can't say to Bjorn, who wrote the song about his own marriage bust-up, no, I've never heard of that one.
So, if anything, you go back to your high school days and draw it from there.
Well, I just spoke it, really. I just held the book, and I tried to be very mindful of the fact that it was about his personal life, and I just treated it as a monologue, and that's how I got the job. So,
wow.
Mm. And we were blessed because they had the wonderful attitude of, we're in Australia, we're going to make it an Australian production. So everybody had Australian accents. They made all the geographical references Australian. It really made a huge difference. It felt like an original production. There was no sense of, we have to replicate what happened in London and Canada.
Right,
you stand here when you're seeing this. It was extremely organic.
Don't hold your hand that way, hold your hand this
absolutely
way.
Absolutely not.
Right.
Because Australians really get ABBA. I think that they, you know, they came out here, they tour, they things like that. Muriel's Wedding brought it all back. And Mamma Mia, in so many ways, I mean, even the movie, to a point, was maybe not as successful elsewhere than it was here.
Mm.
Everything that they do is just, you know, just is so successful.
They're certainly born under a star, those boys. It's definitely extraordinary.
You are listening to Word for Word across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Dean Beck and Andrew Pryor are with you today. Our special guest is Anne Wood, starring in Anything Goes. It's from Wednesday the 20th through to Sunday the 24th of July on at the State Theatre Arts Centre. You can find out more information by checking out the productioncompany.com.au website.
And I've got a question I've been dying to ask you. So you, it's a who's who of musical productions that you've been in. What's the production that you'd either like to be in or wish that you were in? What part would you really love?
Oh, that's really tricky. That's a tough one.
I gave you no warning for that.
No, no warning at all.
No.
Oh, let me think. Well, in Anything Goes, I'd love to be playing Reno Sweeney. But I'm not. I can't dance.
I didn't think it was PC to talk about the current production. But anyway, never mind. Moving on.
Someone might sleep.
There's a broken kneecap, then we know why.
Yes, it's very sad. I would have had a different career if I could have danced. I think I did Follies briefly here, and I would love to have a red hot go at that rather than just a short stint. It was so wonderful, but felt like a taster because it was the production company. It's funny, I don't really fantasize about things like that.
Right. God, I fantasize about being Alpha Bo all the time.
That's probably why I don't get paid for musical theatre.
And you're a mum. How is it to do all this night work? How do you manage being a mum?
It's certainly a different world with responsibility of a child. Yeah, but we manage. We bumble along together and manage. It's great.
And in this cast lineup, you are amongst some pretty good company, including your good friend Todd McKinney. He's in there as well.
Yes.
So, who else have we got? Wayne Scott Kerman. We've got Chrissy Sullivan, Amanda Harrison, Alex Rathberg.
Speaking of Elphaba, Amanda Harrison. Yeah. Yes. She was that extraordinary Elphaba in the beginning.
She was amazing. Mm, really. Production.
And the omnipresent John O'May.
Yes. John O'May, I did Mamma Mia with him, and now we're playing opposite one another. We have a little bit of a pash at one point.
Oh, lovely. Mm. Good to know John's still kicking. He's been around forever and a day.
He'd probably resent that.
No, I mean that lovingly.
Well, about a year ago, I ran into him and he said he'd retired. So I was surprised to see him in the room. But he's just hilarious.
Retirement's doing well.
He's making me laugh a lot. It's good fun.
Is there a camaraderie amongst Australia's theatrical elite, of which you are a part?
Oh, thank you very much. I think there is. Yeah. It's such a small business, really, in Australia. We all know one another. We all know one another's business. And especially when you do something with a production company, you're white-knuckling it half the time. So it's definitely a camaraderie. We're all in it together and we're all terrified.
Is there that's got to be a sort of skill set, though, to be able to put it out there, put on a show, and, like you say, really not be 100% comfortable with where you're at with it, but deliver it and still get an applause.
I think that's why by the end of the week we're starting to get excited because we're thinking this is really cooking now. And unfortunately it's time for the closing party.
You've also done a bit of TV work.
Only a little.
Do you like that? Or
I find it quite... I was talking to Christy Whelan about this last night because she's been doing quite a lot of telly lately, and I find it quite difficult because I'm used to playing big auditoriums, 2,000 people, and making sure the person in the back row is getting what I'm trying to express.
Yeah, yeah.
And I find it quite... I think it's a very... If you come from a theatre background, I think television is quite a tricky skill. Lots of people master it. I don't feel that I am one of those at this point. I think people who don't come from a theatre background who go into television and maybe add an advantage to a degree. But some people are very good at just dropping the big thing and doing it. I've been in the recording studio lately and I've found that very tricky too, where you have to bring your performance down. The microphone is an inch away from your mouth, and instead of projecting to the person at the back of the 2,000-seater, I'm actually telling my story to something that's an inch away from my teeth.
And super sensitive.
Exactly.
Not a mini mic that's been pulled back to counter your booming voice.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's, to me, that is very similar to television, where the camera is just a couple of feet away, recording every twitch of your eyebrow, which wouldn't be seen in a normal situation that I'm used to working in. When I did the Midsummer Festival at the beginning of the year, the audience sits 45 downstairs. I don't know whether you've been there.
But yes.
It's a great venue. And the audience is right there. And I find that quite daunting too, knowing I can see everyone sitting there and they can see if I have a moment where I might have forgotten a word or I blank for a second. I feel that they can just... They've read my mind. The audience, they're so close.
Now, you have a sister, Catherine, that plays piano extraordinarily well.
I do.
Knows it all.
And he really does.
And do you often get a chance to work with her?
No, very rarely. No. She hates working with me.
Really? Why? Why is that?
She won't even play Christmas carols for me on Christmas Day.
Oh.
She's we live around the corner from one another and we've been best friends forever, obviously. She's been in London for the last 7 years, so she's been working on shows over there and doing other projects as well. She started off, she did a tour with Darren Hayes and then ended up in London and stayed. And she was the original on-stage pianist for Jersey Boys. So she came back here to do I think they asked her to come and play the organ book in Hairspray, so she decided it was good timing for her, so she came back. So, and she's working on Love Never Dies at the moment.
Jersey Boys is an interesting phenomenon.
Mm.
It's a great show, but out of nowhere, like I went along and saw it, had absolutely no idea what it was going to be about, no expectations, loved it.
Me too. I if you'd asked me, I wouldn't have been able to name a Frankie Valli song, and I sung along to every number at the top of my lungs.
Absolutely.
I was a complete pain in the neck. It was just brilliant. It was one of the best nights I think I've ever had in the theatre.
This idea of pinning together popular songs from groups or bands or whatever into a narrative and delivering that as a musical it's really a new phenomenon decade or
and
so.
And controversial too. Some people don't, some musical theatre aficionados don't like that idea.
Mm.
It has to be something
sometimes
written originally.
Sometimes it's not done very well.
Well, no. But there's been some classics, you know. Buddy
was
a fantastic one. I loved that one.
Mamma Mia.
Yes, please, let's state them. Let's not ignore the elephant in the room here. I think there's two types, though. There are the ones that are stories about people who, like Jersey Boys, was about Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons.
Yeah.
Like Buddy was about Buddy Holly. Oh, yeah. And then there are the ones where they've used songs like We Will Rock You and Mamma Mia, where they've used songs to and inserted them into a narrative that has absolutely nothing to do with the originators of that music.
Yeah.
And I mean, myself, I get my back up when people use the term jukebox musical. It just drives me nuts because I feel that it's used in a derogatory way.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think that Mamma Mia was incredibly clever the way they put those songs in.
Mm.
And the one of the reasons the songs, ABBA's songs really endure is because they often wrote about their own lives, about real situations. And people often don't think about the words. Mm. The amount of people who would speak to us from the audience after the show and say, my God, that song, I've been singing that song in the shower for 20 years and I realise I never really listened to the words. And this and the show contextualised the song.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Winner Takes It All is a classic example.
Exactly.
Bawled my eyes out when I saw that on stage.
And it's still, after 25 years since he wrote it, it still stands because he wrote it about his own personal experience with the breakup of his marriage. That's why it's so gutting still and why it works so well in the context of a narrative.
Yeah.
Conversely, some of the songs they've written really aren't that deep.
I love Bang a Boomerang.
Gimme a Man After Midnight.
That's well. Very sometimes.
I've got a little story about that I'm going to name drop for a second. I was sitting in a bar with Bjorn while he was here and he was talking about apparently they had been through a period where the record company was insisting that they wrote two songs a week and it was too much.
Wow.
They were struggling with it. And so he said, I was so mad one day I just sat down and I wrote Dum Dum Diddle, I thought. Bugger them. I don't think he said bugger. He might have said something else. But he that was him flipping the bird at the record company. And, of course, it went to number one. He just couldn't do anything without it succeeding.
Now, you mentioned before that you're recording.
Spice Girls did it too. Sorry,
You mentioned before that you're recording. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. I was really inspired by the audience reaction to a lot of the songs and the fact that they were saying I'm listening to the lyrics for the very first time. So I'm actually recording an ABBA album and I'm taking out the thing that everybody loves, the pop. So I don't know what the hell I think I'm doing, but we'll see what happens. And I'm just concentrating.
What are you left with?
Well, the lyrics.
Yeah.
So I'm taking out the pop arrangements and I'm just focusing on the stories that Benny and Bjorn wrote. And I've chosen stories that particularly touch me. I'm working with James Roach, who is the guy from Bachelor Girl. He's producing the album, but he's also playing keys on the album, and several other fantastic musos. And we're hoping that's going to be finished by the end of August.
Does it therefore manifest as a more sort of soulful type?
It's very what I'm hoping is sort of late night, very slash your wrists or
smoky,
pash somebody.
Smoky wine bar type feel.
Yeah.
Right.
Quite dark and
cabaret?
At the end of the dinner party rather than the beginning.
Right.
Kind of.
Agnetha just had an album a little bit like that just recently, her last one. a solo Agnew had a solo album that was a little bit like that, just about 2 or 3 years ago, I think it was.
Yeah.
It was fantastic, so it'll be great.
Do you think they'll come back? Get back together again? Do a world tour?
I don't think they ever will.
No?
I can't. They might.
Why work for a living when that money's just, you know, coming in day after day?
Exactly. I think Benny still works with his band. He's got a little Oompa-pa band that he travels around with, and it's like Swedish folk songs, I think they do.
And Wood, what's next for you, Marty?
Well, the album, which will be exciting, and that's I'm really focused on that at the moment.
Bit of PR around that?
Yes, hopefully.
Let us know.
We'll see what happens. I will. Thank you.
And any other shows on the horizon?
Not at the moment, no.
Okay.
Not much at all.
Motherhood.
We'll see what happens. Yes, I'm loving that.
Is it tough working in with the shows?
It's really tough, but being a mum is really, it's a really difficult job. It's
having your parents in Kerrang really isn't that. It's not handy, is it? Really? No. I was like, oh, mum, can you look after the... No.
It's kind of, I think it's, I often say it's 50 times harder than I thought it was going to be, and it's 5,000 times more rewarding. I had no idea that it was going to be just so extraordinary.
For your own extracurricular activities, what do you do? Have you got a hobby? Do you knit? Do you read books? What do you do?
I've just demolished the back of my house, not personally, but I'm project managing the so we're doing a bit of renovating at the moment, which is really good fun. And
okay.
Yeah, I've got lots of things. I'm very busy, but...
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Word for Word today.
It's been an absolute pleasure to
find out a little bit more about you.
Mm.
And I really am appreciative of you being so giving and yourself today. So thank you. You can catch Anne Wood in Anything Goes, being put on by the production company from Wednesday the 20th through to Sunday the 24th of July. It's on at the State Theatre Arts Centre. Check out theproductioncompany.com.au for more information. You will find a podcast and a transcript of this interview available for download from Joy's website, joy.org.au. And if you would like to correspond with the program, please do so. Simply email wordforword@joy.org.au. Till next time, I'm Dean Beck.
And I'm Andrew Pryor.
You take care, keep well, and bye for now.
Word for Word is produced by Robert Briley and presented by Dean Beck and Sue Wilkinson from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9. Word for Word is made possible thanks to funding provided by the Community Broadcasting Foundation and is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations in the Community Radio Network.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.